What a performance of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. That was Kirill Gerstein with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, David Robertson conducting. And here in the studio, I have someone who is rather familiar with Kirill. I'd like to welcome Pierre van der Vesthuizen to the studio. And it's great to talk to you again about upcoming performances, including the Piano Master Series, May 7th with Kirill Gerstein.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
How have things been going at the Gilmore? There's you've continued the Rising Stars series. Yeah. We're breaking into spring.
Right. It's been a flurry of activity at the Gilmore. You know, we're, as you said, wrapping up the Rising Stars series with Kate Liu this Sunday. At the Wellspring Theater, and she's someone that I have just been following for quite some time. I saw her the first time when I was watching the live stream of the Chopin competition live from Warsaw, and this was actually one of the early knockout rounds. They do that a year before the competition happens, and she sat down, and it's just one pianist after another. And she sat down. I remember I was watching with my wife, and we both went, wait a minute. This is something special. This is really something else. And so Kate is, well, she won't be playing any Chopin here. She'll be playing Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff and Beethoven and Liszt and so on. But she is such a gifted performer, very poetic, very lyrical, and very powerful for such a... She's kind of tiny, but she's very powerful.
So... Last fall, you came in and mm-hmm. you talked about each and every one of the Rising Stars in a pre-recorded interview. And I had the opportunity to do some post-production adding performances from all of them. I had to go searching YouTube. I had to find, you know, any possible avenue to their current recordings. And I found those Chopin competition videos of Kate.
Yeah.
I had the same reaction.
You
just, she casts a spell of just pure music.
Right.
It's really hard to look away.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, when she sent her press photos, it's all very sweet and pure and innocent and everything. But when she walks on stage, she unleashes, there's an emotional intensity there that belies some, you know, her sweet demeanor off stage.
She'll be performing some wonderful pieces, mm-hmm. Mozart's sonata in A minor, Kirchhoff 310, a Schubert sonata, Deutsch Listing 784. That's also.
She actually had to change that.
Did she switch it up?
She did switch it up to a Beethoven sonata, Beethoven Opus 110. Which, yes, if you're going to switch it up, yeah, that's a good one to switch it up to. That Beethoven sonata happens to be, you know, something. If we talk about desert island music, that if you're stuck, one thing that you would want to listen to, and I think about that piece. There's a slow movement to the middle movement that is just heart-wrenching. And Beethoven actually quotes from Bach's St. Matthew Passion, one of the arias there where Maria is holding Jesus as he has died. And it's just this achingly beautiful aria that then turns into a slow canon, and it kind of returns and then just bursts slowly but surely, builds up and bursts into this glorious resurrection. Mm. You know, it's just, it's a very powerful piece.
I was, the first phrase that came to mind was, oh, an old soul sonata, kind of.
Exactly, exactly. And when I was in Cleveland at the piano competition, I would always have some sort of anxiety or trepidation when these young pianists would program Beethoven 110 or Opus 111, these last three sonatas, because you really do need an old soul to be able to play these. And having witnessed Kate's performances, I have no doubt that she'll be up for the task.
Yeah. Part of what was so intense about watching those competition performances is that it was Chopin competition.
Like, right.
She had to set herself apart among all the pianists.
Right.
And she did that with ease.
Yes.
It looked like. Yeah.
Well, and if you think of who's on the jury of that competition particularly, you have the likes of Marta Argerich, Garrick Olsen. I mean, names in the industry we all look up to and adore. And, you know, to be able to really make an impression on these artists, that goes a long way in my books.
Yeah. Will she include the Prokofiev Sonata
on Sunday? The Prokofiev is in there, Prokofiev Eighth Sonata.
Didn't she save the hardest thing for the end of her program?
Absolutely. This Prokofiev, again, I hate to play favorites, but it is one of my favorites. I know everybody loves the Sixth Sonata and the Seventh Sonata. But the Eighth Sonata is probably the most lyrical, and I can see why she was attracted to it as a lyrical, poetic player, performer. This is really where we see Prokofiev at his most lyrical and poetic. And there's some wonderful quotes about Prokofiev's playing, especially from David Oistrakh, the violinist who premiered his violin sonata, violin concerto, who wrote it for, who talked about when Prokofiev does turn inwards and lyrical and poetic, that it was such a surprise that it was almost childish innocence that, you know, really made a big impact, because we tend to think of Prokofiev as percussive and out there and wild.
Thorny.
And exactly. And there's some of that in here too, but it's overall a very lyrical, beautiful, poetic piece.
She's put together Mozart, Beethoven, Prokofiev. And when is the concert?
This Sunday, yes. So this Sunday coming up, April 28th. At 4 p.m. at the Wellspring Theater downtown in the Epic Center.
Full information and tickets are available ahead of time through the Gilmore website. It's thegilmore.org.
That's right.
And for those who are enjoying downtown, walking around, there's a box office attended between, I think, 10 and 4. Or
10 and 4, yep. Yeah. And if there's the box office is staffed for the most part, 10 to 1 right there in the little box office cubicle. But then our office is always open till 5, 6 sometimes.
The Gilmore offers so many concerts and seasonal options and things like that. Sometimes it is nice to work it out face-to-face with a person.
Absolutely.
So, Kate Liu, she is American, right?
Yes. She was born in Singapore and then moved here as a child and studied here. And
At
Curtis Institute. There's a running joke that, you know, if you are 18 or 19 studying at Curtis, you're way too old. Curtis has been known to produce and attract sort of child prodigies from around the world and have just a long history of really cultivating young talent.
I think you can attend Curtis when you are still a young teen, like 14.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And
the Hsu brothers.
The Hsu brothers, so many wonderful, Yu Jia Wang, Lang Lang, all of really a long line of great pianists and violinists, Hilary Hahn, and the like came out of the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. It's amazing. And when you go there, it's not a very impressive, imposing place because you build it up in your mind, you know, but it's just people doing their job, loving what they're doing. It's a special place.
I've never visited Philadelphia. If I were to, I'd certainly want to stand on the steps of Curtis Institute.
Absolutely.
Which in my mind has, you know, is a palatial.
I know. Sort of. I mean, it is beautiful. It's a beautiful space, and it's in a wonderfully historic section of Philadelphia. But yes, you tend to think of this skyscraper place because that's how we build it up as musicians. But it was somebody's house that they converted, you know, so.
Maybe it's just the rumor I heard, but has Kate had to overcome an issue where she had a physical problem with playing and had to take time out and like relearn to play, perhaps?
Yeah, and that is something that often happens with, you know, young pianists who are particularly talented, who get thrown into the deep end often. and just play constantly, and a ton of concerts come up, and they're young and excited and think they can do it all.
Well, sure,
right?
You feel good all the time.
And exactly. it's an issue that has really bubbled up to the awareness in conservatories and universities around the country in recent years. And I know that at Cleveland Institute of Music, even now, they have somebody in residence who really monitors the students' wellness and health, and particularly as it relates to healthy practice habits and how you sit at the piano, and they put electrodes on them and monitor the movement and see what is healthy movement and help them adjust their posture and all of these things. So it's a good sign that this is something that's being paid attention to in the industry.
It's possible to have a very long career as a pianist.
It really is. And now with technology, so they, you know, they have these electrodes all up and down the spine and the arms, and they can map out in real time digitally what your body is doing and how it should be behaving to better align with what your particular body is doing as you're playing. And, you know, they actually just took a page from the athletic playbook, right? As they should, because I remember reading an article in The Atlantic a few years ago where they compared pianists to some of the world's top athletes. And I loved the headline. It had a question mark saying, are pianists really the world's super athletes? And it compared all of the things that pianists have to go through, all of the training, the thousands of hours of training, the way that the fingers are being trained, the way that the hand-eye coordination, the stamina of building up to a performance or a series of performance and then back down afterwards. It's exactly similar to how an athlete would prepare.
Physically and mentally.
Physically and mentally, absolutely.
Pierre van der Vesthuizen is my guest here today. He's the executive director of the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. Mm-hmm. And this season, the Rising Stars series, will it conclude, did you say?
Yes.
On Sunday.
This will be the last one.
This is your last chance. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful artist named Kate Liu, mm-hmm. Who will be performing an equally beautiful program.
Yeah.
She will perform Sunday at 4 o'clock. And then Mr. Gerstein will show up in town and deliver an amazing program.
Yes, as only he can do.
Did your jaw drop when you saw his plan?
I did. Yeah. Kirill has built up this wonderful reputation as somebody that can take on creative, imaginative, challenging for him. Not so much for the listener. I mean, this is going to be an absolute joy to be there. But he takes you, what I love about Kirill is he takes you on an emotional journey, right?
This is a program is entirely structured to pull us through an idea or pull
exactly.
us through a journey.
Exactly. So, you know, Kirill Gerstein, our 2010 Gilmore artist, I was telling some of the other day, it's really hard to underestimate what Kirill has done for the Gilmore and for this community. Kirill has been at the festival very regularly, almost I think every festival since 2010, since winning. And he's the only Gilmore artist that was also a Gilmore Young artist. That's a really distinguishing career right there already. And he is a fascinating character, fascinating history. You know, he came here as a young boy from the Soviet Union and made his way to Boston, where he actually started studying jazz at Berkeley. So his entire background at the piano is very natural, improvisatory, playful, inquisitive. And then from there, he made his way into classical music, classical study. And he has the kind of technique that it just makes you weep as a pianist. Because he can do, you know, people ask me, well, what does it mean? Well, see, you know, think of what's the most difficult move in ice skating or figure skating, you know, the triple axel or whatever, yeah. You know, things that did combinations that would strike fear in the hearts of many figure skaters. This is the kind of stuff that Kirill would do at the piano that would make most pianists just our jaws drop, because he does it at lightning speeds. He does it with such ease. He does it with such facility. It makes it look so easy. And more importantly, it makes it that it comes out of the music. It is part and parcel of what he wants to say. It's part of his musical voice. And it's not just some technicality that he's trying to impose on the music. So anyway, I can go on and on about Kirill, but he...
You're making me think of Usain Bolt, the runner, I mean, the elite athlete,
yes.
In a way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the kind of things that he can do. You know, he's the kind of pianist that would program all the Rachmaninoff concerti in one weekend, or all the Beethoven concerti in one weekend, or, you know, it's that kind of intellect as well. He's a genius, undoubtedly, in my mind. And he has, with his Gilmour Award, this $300,000 wonderful award, he has used the bulk of that for commissioning new works. And that tells us also about him as an artist, that he loves to explore. And he's commissioned people like Chick Corea, Thomas Addis, just all over the place, Timothy Andrews, Alexander Gurr,
Oliver Nussen,
yes. Yeah. So, and because of that, he's made an enormous impact in the industry. And that is really what he aims to do, is not just be a top performer, but really somebody who has a voice, a significant impact in the musical community. And I think he has succeeded.
I love that, you know, the Gershwin performance we just heard, you told us that, in fact, jazz was his first love.
Right.
You know, so of all the people to play Gershwin and or any jazz-inflected music today, he's ideal.
Right. Because he's been here so many times, whenever I talk to people in the community, I love to ask them, what's your favorite memory of festival? And so many people have told me about the time Pink Martini was here and Kirill was in the audience, and the pianist from Pink Martini asked for a volunteer in the audience to come up and play a duet with him, and Kirill came up stage, and the pianist said, "Oh my God, it's Kirill! You're the greatest pianist in the world! I can play with you." And they improvised together, and that's the kind of spontaneity that I just love about Kirill.
Brought down the house, and he just does seem accessible, too. He's he's one of the stickier Gilmour artists.
Yes.
He comes back to Kalamazoo. He genuinely shows his love of performing and of this community every time.
Yeah, he and I was before coming here, I was in Cleveland, and I go back often to hear, particularly him, play with the Cleveland Orchestra. And I was there last year. He played Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto with the Cleveland Orchestra. And what was lovely is I was there with my family. He was there with his family. The morning of, we all joined the members of the orchestra for coffee and donuts. It was a big community celebration. And he was there with his whole family, interacting with the community, with the orchestra, going straight to rehearsal and concert. That's the kind of person he is. He loves to connect with people.
Would you talk about the circumstances under which he is performing, because he was not originally on the printed schedule back in fall.
Yeah. Right. So unfortunately, Murray Pariah, who we had scheduled, had to withdraw from his entire North American tour through some ongoing health issues. And so I was really scrambling, as you can imagine, trying to figure out next steps. And I'm often in contact with Kirill, and as it turns out, he was going to be in Detroit in the weekend of May 3rd, 4th, and 5th, playing the Tchaikovsky Second Piano Concerto with the Detroit Symphony.
Who does that?
Exactly. And so I said, our original date was May 5th. If we move it a day or two, Would you come and play a solo program for us here? And he didn't, there was no hesitation, just immediately, yes, of course, happy to come and happy to be with everybody in Kalamazoo again. And by the way, do you think this program is acceptable? And he sent me a program that I'm just thrilled about. It's more than acceptable. It's exciting. It's phenomenal. And, you know, we can talk about that too. But
we do have time. We have a few minutes left in this hour. Some words that pop into my mind are both atmospheric, colorful, surprising.
Yeah.
There are enough pieces and voices represented here so that you will have a full meal of what it means to be a pianist. That all the kinds, many kinds of technique are represented here. He's ending with the B minor Liszt sonata.
Yes, he is.
This is one of the greatest pieces ever written for piano.
It is also one of the most controversial pieces among musicologists and pianists. A lot of different opinions and takes on the Liszt sonata. It's one of those pieces that I've heard in competitions with younger pianists so many times that really, again, as we talk with late Beethoven sonatas, you need somebody that has a full command, full grasp of style, structure, form,
history,
and absolutely no technical barriers at all. This is probably, you know, along with the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, this is the Mount Everest of sonatas. It's really a symphony for piano. And the way it's conceived structurally is very symphonic. And it's an emotional journey, this Liszt sonata. It's probably, I think, one of the greatest works Liszt ever wrote. It's Liszt in a very philosophical, reflective mood. There's, you know, sort of anecdotal accounts of Sviatoslav Richter, who was well known for playing this piece and played it in the dark. And, you know, we'd count, it starts with these ominous single notes in octaves at the beginning with long stretched out spaces. And he would sit down and count to 30 before he even played the first note, that kind of atmosphere. But then it quickly evolves into some sections which some pianists have called demonic. You know, it's just there's so much in there, octaves and runs and arpeggios, the whole galore. However, it's all it all serves a higher purpose. This is really pure Liszt as we want to hear him.
I've been told that if Liszt had never written any other work, he would still be a famous composer today for this single piece.
Absolutely.
It's just absolutely that and important.
Most pianists, you know, if you have, if you're a pianist of stature, you tackle this one. You tackle this sonata, try to record it, try to have your standard, because it can mean so many different things to so many different people and so many different artists.
Pierre, I started us at the end of Kirill's recital. Mm-hmm. So if you would quickly sum up the journey that, where it begins in the middle and the end.
So he starts in the first half with Franz Liszt again. He's Eroica Etude, is the Transcendental Etude number 7. This is from a set of Transcendental Etudes, and they are truly, again, this was a young Liszt. And it was Liszt's answer to the Chopin Etudes when he heard them. And it was really, he meant it to be, you know, the definitive answer to all piano technique, you know, the where Bach is the foundation, he would be the very roof of all of this, you know. And but he even had to edit it a few times because it turns out they were unplayable. So they still are nearly unplayable. And I only know of two pianists that have recorded all of them. And that would be Kirill Gerstein and Daniel Trifonov. So they are, you know, again, it tells you something about Kirill as an artist. But then he connects it to Beethoven. Eroica Variations, which of course is the theme from the famous the Third Symphony, mm-hmm. Eroica.
This came first, though, right? I think this. Yeah.
Yes.
He knew this. This theme was one of his favorite little ditties.
Exactly.
For a while.
Exactly. And then he goes into a piece that I'm so glad he's performing. It's very rarely performed. It's Leos Janáček. It's his first piano sonata called From the Street. And it connects to this idea of Eroica, because as we know with both Beethoven and Liszt, it's more about, it's not about someone, it's more about the idea of heroism and heroism of spirit. And this is certainly what this Janáček sonata is also all about. And then after intermission, he starts us off with Thomas Addis. Tom and Kirill have really developed a very close friendship over the years.
This is a British composer.
British composer modern. And pianist. Mm-hmm. And Kirill actually just premiered his latest piano concerto with the Boston Symphony Orchestra in Boston and at Carnegie Hall. And now they're touring Europe with this as well. It was joyously received by audiences and critics alike in New York. Thomas Addis is a very unique voice, which is hard to achieve these days. We feel like we've heard it all in piano, but hearing Addis's works, you really get a sense of this is a visionary. This is somebody that has something new, some actually really unique and interesting colors and textures that he's drawing out of the piano, which I don't say this lightly, but we've seen this from last time from Stockhausen, George Crumb or Debussy, is something that is really interesting and unique and new. And trust Kirill to be, of course, very closely associated with this.
Pierre, we have 60 seconds.
Okay. And then two wartime pieces from Debussy. Again, two short pieces that we've never heard before, or never heard, not never, but very rarely hear.
Yeah.
And then going into the Liszt sonata.
And we finish with Liszt.
Yeah.
Pierre van der Westhuizen and I have been talking about Kirill Gerstein's May 7th performance. Details are at thegilmore.org. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, Kate Liu is this Sunday at 4 o'clock. This was exciting, Pierre. I hope we
Thank
can do
you.
It again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Again, thegilmore.org. And stay tuned now for a news update from NPR here on WMUK Kalamazoo. And we'll hear about 30 seconds of the Liszt Eroica Etude.